Red Line.
European leaders and top diplomats held emergency meetings in a flurry of unprecedented activity aimed at working out a collective response to the election of Donald Trump, who is seen as a threat to the Western alliance's status quo. This is what we are going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines, analyzing the most thought-provoking publications of the week. An article titled, EU Foreign Ministers Meet to Figure Out What to Do, Now That Trump Has Won, carried by the Washington Post and written by Michael Birnbaum, the author relates how the EU is deeply dependent on U.S. cooperation for a host of European priorities, many of which Trump called into question on the campaign trail. Even the most fundamental issue appears to be in flux. American guarantees for Europe's security that have underpinned Western relations since World War II. Building off of this, Mr. Birnbaum later notes how Europe is especially scared about Trump's position towards NATO, writing that Trump has also called into question the need for NATO, the Western military alliance that has recently beefed up its presence in Eastern European member countries that are nervous about Russia. European and NATO leaders have pointed out that the single time NATO nations came to the defense of a member nation under attack was in behalf of the United States following September 11, 2001. They say that if the White House goes in a different direction, American interest would also suffer.
Well, Andrew, I think that we have to agree that obviously Europe is puzzled, Europe is confused, Europe is frustrated, because the choice of American people obviously is not coinciding with the expectations of the bureaucracy in Brussels. We are well aware of those statements which were made referring to Donald Trump during the presidential race. They were not very polite, to say the least, towards Donald Trump. So today, they are thinking of just what to do with that if Donald Trump translates into reality, into practice, what he was talking about, since he was suggesting to revamp the whole story, which is seen as transatlantic alliance. In practical terms, I think that the flurry of that diplomatic activity, which we've seen this week, has one goal. Well in advance, before Donald Trump's, as elected president, agenda is not worked out, to tell him, look, guy, there are such and such red lines which you can't cross. With all your, you know, ambitions to emerge as a revolutionary, you have to follow, you know, American policy, and you have to understand that there are certain basic things you can't go beyond that. But whether Trump would be able to overrun that inertia, that's a big question, of course. And now it's too early to talk about that.
Well, the way I see it with the EU, this is all posturing. They're preparing themselves to literally play out the art of the deal by saying things that they might not even mean just so they walk them back later, and it appears to be a concession. But this is all very controversial, which is why we're discussing it today. So we're going to begin by speaking with our in-studio guest, Mr. Igor Palichari. He's a professor at the Higher School of Economics here in Moscow. You know, I want to ask you about the very, very liberal EU. I mean, right now we know what the status quo is. The status quo was first shook by Brexit. Now it's totally shook by the earthquake of Donald Trump. So it seems like the liberal post-Cold War order in the EU is now between a rock and a hard place, if you will. How do you see things?
Well, first of all, I would even not forget a migrants crisis, you know, because Brexit is something which hits fundamentals of the banking, EU banking system, while I would say that the migrants hit the same identity of Europe. I mean, we still see a lot of talks, but there is a fat division between the traditional member states of the EU and the Eastern European new member states on the topic. So, and frankly speaking, they have been trying to present migrants as refugees at the very beginning, but now they realize they're also economic migrants, and so this is going to be a really rocking hard the stability of the union. As regards to the Trump election, I was quite surprised to see how outspoken was Juncker in expressing his, I mean, he's been, I think this is like a very solid indicator of the fact that the EU feels that in a closer relationship, bilateral relationship, we're going back to the bilateral world here. The multilateralism is coming to an end for many reasons. And if the U.S. and Russia find a common path, the first to suffer might be not the Europe, but the European Union. I mean, all this multilateralism which was developed over the last decades and which was a way to ease relationships, you know, somehow it's losing its grip. So we're going back to the bilateral relationships, and I find it pretty normal that the EU feels it might get very easily marginalized in the whole context.
Igor, don't you find it ridiculous that Europe, which for the last 2 years was trying to deter Russia, now is thinking of a new deterrence, how to deter Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, this is still an ongoing movie. We have the if Michael Flynn is really going to have the central role in the administration of Trump. I mean, this guy has been interviewed he was on Russia Today. He was, you know, he's like the other side of the moon. I wouldn't say the dark side, but the other side.
But what about Europe? What about Europe?
Well,
Europe is still sticking to anti-Russian sanctions.
European
establishment. Yeah, they're still stubborn. They say that we will not backtrack on our policy on Ukraine, on Syria, like that.
I think Europe is getting in a phase in which they have no more excuses. It was so easy. The narrative of the last years has been the EU taking hard stands against Russia, and in the backstage, individual member states of the EU, approaching Russia and saying, hey, you know, it doesn't depend on, our hands are tied, you know, and so on. Now that they have no more excuses, now the situation is evident, and it will lead to all the EU doesn't have an army, doesn't have a central intelligence service. How are they going to implement their foreign policy if it's not fully backed up by the Americans, you know?
Right.
So, look, I don't think Russia will change its stance in Syria at all. Russia follows a protocol of a plan in Syria which goes far in the Primakov's ideas and ideal, if not ideological, stand toward the Middle East. While in Ukraine, Russia has been improvising quite a lot. I mean, the crisis in Ukraine has got totally unprepared Russia. This is my point of view. So it's not so much the Trump-Putin relationship is not going to be so much depending on what the Russia is able to conceive in Syria as much as what the U.S. is able not to do anymore in Ukraine.
Yeah, this is a pretty deep way of looking at it. You know, we're going to bring on another expert.
That.
Yeah, we're going to bring another expert to add some more insight into this U.S.-EU relationship with Trump. And that's Mr. Paolo Salom. He's a political observer at Corriere della Sera from Milan.
Red Line.
Hello, Mr. Salom. How are you this morning?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you. You know, our in-studio guest, Mr. Igor Palicheri, was talking about, you know, Donald Trump and President Putin and how a relationship between the two might also affect the EU. So what do you think can happen? I mean, some other experts are saying that Russia and the U.S. might even strike a type of gentleman's agreement for quote-unquote spheres of influence. I mean, given how Donald Trump is the consummate dealmaker and the author of The Art of the Deal. What do you think can happen with the U.S.-Russian relationship, and how will this impact in Europe? Are European establishment leaders right to be upset, nervous, and anxious?
Well, I'd say that the election of Mr. Donald Trump has been quite a surprise here in Europe. And, of course, now everybody's trying to understand what is going to be in the next month in this new administration that will start beginning January the 20th. We can say that surely something is going to change, definitely. Mr. Trump will, of course, try not to revolutionize the policy of the United States. We shall understand that, should understand that what move the nations are, their own interests. So there is a limit to what Trump can change in the near future. But surely we will see an appeasement between Washington and Russia. And this is going to make many European countries upset, I think.
Okay.
Yes?
Yeah. You know, when you were talking about the European country, it just made me want to think of an idea to ask you real quick. It's, you know, we have two different types of EU states, and we have the very liberal ones like France and Germany, and we also have the conservative ones like Poland and Hungary. So, I mean, how do you see this kind of interplay playing out in the future? I mean, you know, these conservative states, Poland, you know, they're very, very anti-Russian. However, Hungary is more pragmatic towards Russia, and actually Viktor Orban celebrated Trump's victory. Whereas, you know, in Germany and France, the mood was more mixed. I mean, how do you see this relationship evolving?
It's complicating the relation inside the EU, of course. Poland's policy is the traditional view of that country. I think that we should speak of fear in this case. We know what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed. So I think that we should instead try to find this election, this change in the American administration as an occasion to reassess the balance between countries in Europe and specifically with Russia. I mean, that could be a new way of relating between countries, and this is something that can be conceived in Europe in a way that we don't make fear at the center of the relations, but cooperation, friendship. Russia is a part of the European continent. It's an important country in the world, and we cannot imagine a future of contraposition, of fight against this big country. It's impossible to look at the future in this way, not for Europe. We must be friend to Russia because it's in our own interest. And for our part, I think that Italy is working in this way.
Okay, and for our last guest to join this segment is Mr. Gilbert Mercier. He's author of The Orwellian Empire, editor-in-chief of News Junkie Post, and a geopolitical analyst.
Red Line.
But one of the things that we see all across Europe with the EU and NATO, the establishment figures are scared. They know that Trump's going to shake up the status quo. But is it all hysteria, or do they have a good reason to actually think that?
Well, again, I want to highlight the role of the Ministry of Truth of the Orwellian construct, aka George Soros, lead financier behind Hillary Clinton. George Soros will not get his war with Russia, which would have been actually likely a war with Russia, China, and Iran, which likely would have been World War III. He will not get that. And that's a good thing. I think, in my opinion, it's a good thing. Now, you're talking about NATO. Well, of course, because the economy is geared not only in the U.S., but also in France, with heavy into arm manufacturing, and Germany and the U.K., they want to have those very powerful lobbyists, want to have more money allocated to military spending. Therefore, a Trump detente with Russia is not good for them, because NATO, which is a Cold War institution, will lose its raison d'être. And further, I'll tell you something else that NATO and the West should think about. If NATO is not able to defeat the Taliban, Pashtuns with Kalashnikov, or are they going to be able to take on the Russian army, the Chinese army, and the Iranian army? I don't think so.
Okay, well, what I want to ask you now, Gilbert, is about this so-called EU army and that proposal, because you spoke about military-industrial complex, and that kind of sparked my mind to want to ask you, what do you think about this EU army? Is it realistic, and what would the purpose be?
I think it's actually a very good idea, and I actually proposed that a while back when France declared a state of emergency for a very odd reason, okay, last year. I suggested that France, and as a matter of fact, all European countries, to save money, should put back a draft. Now, that's an interesting concept. Now, they're not going to do it because it would be highly unpopular. I think they should, personally. There will be a small, limber, very well-trained professional army, which France and the UK and Germany already have, especially France. But I think that's going to be a rethink of Europe. And I think that it's going to go back to the Gaullist principle of being independent from Washington. You see, in France, for example, De Gaulle kicked out the Americans and got out of NATO. France went back to NATO only recently under Sarkozy. And Sarkozy, just like Hollande, is a technocrat aligned with the banks, the IMF, the World Bank, Washington. And it's time for Europe, for Western Europe, to become proud again, to not be the vassals of Washington and globalist institutions. I mean, this is really the question here that should be posed. Can we rethink globalization, and can we have actually a better globalization with protecting cultural integrity of the various countries on one hand, and on the other hand, not some form of nationalism of exclusion, if you wish, some form of nationalism that is not racist, and so on and so on.
Okay, Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us for this segment. We're just going to wrap it up. You know, Sergey, I think that from our discussion, it's really revealed that, you know, Donald Trump is an enigma to many. The establishment, European politicians, diplomats, military figures, so on and so forth, they're upset because no one wants to change the status quo. They're very comfortable in their positions, but the times they are changing, as the saying goes, and Donald Trump is just the definition of that change. And we're going to have to see what happens, but I don't think anyone being so hyperbolic about, oh, Trump's going to dismantle NATO, get rid of the EU, I think they really need to calm down and actually get sober and look at what's happening, because big changes are underway, but they're not going to be catastrophic.
But you can't keep status quo forever. Things are changing. And obviously the election of Donald Trump would, I think, trigger a new process and probably will get Russia's relations with Europe out of the deadlock and out of that mess we've seen in the last 2 years.
Yes, we can only hope. So we're going to thank all of our guests for participating, beginning with our in-studio guest, Mr. Igor Palichari. He's professor at the Higher School of Economics. We also spoke to Mr. Gilbert Mercier once more. He's author of The Orwellian Empire, editor-in-chief of News Junkie Post, and a geopolitical analyst. And we also had Mr. Paolo Salome on the line. He's a political observer at Corriere della Sera from Milan. Following in our program, we have Barack Obama patching up a cracked legacy. Stay with us.